In the 1950s, a child's biggest fear might have been polio. Today, it's more likely to be their own mind. Depression has increased tenfold since mid-century, with the average age of first onset plummeting from 30 to just 14. By high school graduation, 15% of teenagers will have experienced major depression, with girls twice as vulnerable as boys. This isn't just sadness. It's a fundamental shift in how young people interpret their world. The culprit isn't what most parents assume. It's not social media alone, academic pressure, or even trauma. It's something far more insidious: learned pessimism. The habitual belief that bad events are permanent, pervasive, and personal. And here's the revolutionary insight: pessimism can be unlearned. When infants discover they can influence their world, crying for attention, reaching for toys, they develop their first understanding that actions matter. This is the birth of optimism. Between ages 5 and 7, children develop explanatory style, their habitual way of interpreting why things happen. 6-year-old Ian struggles with Legos while his sister builds effortlessly. His father's mistakes, empty praise during failure, solving problems for him, ignoring pessimistic self-talk, "I'm a dumbo," teach Ian that abilities are fixed. 7-year-old Tamara faces difficult ballet moves differently. Her mother validates frustration but encourages practice, helping Tamara see failure as temporary and changeable through effort. By adolescence, these patterns crystallize. 13-year-old Marla's diary reveals catastrophic thinking, feeling like an untouchable, fantasizing about her funeral, spiraling after missing a party invitation. For pessimistic children, normal teenage rejections become proof of permanent inadequacy. Depression rates spike in adolescence because hormonal changes, social pressure, and established pessimistic thinking create a perfect storm. American classrooms overflow with affirmations and participation trophies designed to build self-worth. But this approach has backfired. The fundamental flaw? Trying to teach children to feel good before they've learned to do well. Self-esteem isn't a cause of success, it's a consequence. Longitudinal research confirms self-esteem doesn't predict future success. Success builds self-esteem. When children receive inflated grades or praise for minimal effort, they feel temporarily better but remain unprepared for real challenges. What matters more is explanatory style. A child thinking, "I'm bad at math," after one poor test has adopted a permanent, pervasive explanation that leads to giving up. A child thinking, "I didn't study enough," sees a temporary, specific cause that motivates change. Empty praise doesn't interrupt this cycle. It just delays the inevitable reckoning with reality. Optimism isn't about positivity. It's about how we explain causes. Children at risk for depression believe bad events have permanent causes. "No one will ever want to be friends with me," versus "it takes time to find a new best friend." Optimistic children explain successes with permanent traits they'll always have. The second dimension is pervasiveness, whether children contain failure to specific situations or let it contaminate everything. Jeremy lost an essay contest and concluded, "I stink at everything," withdrawing from all activities. Melissa thought, "I'm not great at creative writing, but I'm good at other subjects," and continued functioning well. The third dimension is personalization, deciding who's at fault. Children who habitually blame themselves have lower self-esteem, while those who blame circumstances feel better but may become angrier. The goal is accuracy, taking responsibility when truly at fault while not blaming themselves for things beyond control. Parental criticism shapes these patterns profoundly. "You're always such a monster," teaches permanent character flaws. "You are really misbehaving today," focuses on specific, changeable behavior. This distinction between general self-blame, internal, permanent, pervasive, and behavioral self-blame, internal, temporary, specific, determines whether criticism damages self-esteem or motivates change. When Jennifer and Tara's tent collapsed during a camping trip, soaking their supplies, Jennifer laughed it off as bad luck. Tara saw it as proof she was lazy, sloppy, and can't do anything right, and felt distressed for weeks. The ABC model explains why. Adversity, what happened, beliefs, interpretations, consequences, emotional results. Our reactions stem from how we interpret events, not the events themselves. These interpretations become self-fulfilling prophecies. Denise believed she was boring, making her speak hesitantly, which actually made conversations awkward. When a man asked for her number, she dismissed it. He was probably just being polite. She fixated on moments confirming her negative self-image while ignoring contrary evidence. Teaching children the ABC connection provides essential emotional regulation tools. Use three-panel cartoons showing an adversity, being left out at recess, different interpretations, they hate me versus they didn't see me, and resulting emotions, despair versus mild disappointment. A poor test grade can mean I'm stupid, helplessness, or I need to study differently, determination. Through practice, children recognize their power to influence emotions by examining their beliefs, the cornerstone of optimism. Martin Seligman's 1984 Penn Prevention Program taught optimism to at-risk preteens using comic strips, role-playing, and characters like Hopeful Holly and Gloomy Greg. Results were striking. Immediately after, only 13% showed moderate to severe depressive symptoms versus 23% in controls. 2 years later, the gap widened to 22% versus 44%, demonstrating lasting resilience. The core technique is disputation, challenging negative beliefs with evidence through the ABCD method, adding disputation and energization to ABC. This isn't forced positivity, it's about accuracy. If a child thinks nobody wants to play with me after one rejection, help them recall times others included them and consider alternative explanations. Children should also decatastrophize by asking, what's the worst outcome? The best? Most likely. Then create action plans for each. Make this engaging through the brain game. Parents role-play pessimistic thoughts while children practice rapid-fire disputation. The method becomes most effective when parents model this thinking by verbalizing their own thought processes during challenges. Young children absorb optimism through mastery, positivity, and explanatory style. Mastery begins with contingency. When babies learn their actions produce predictable outcomes, they become active and joyful. When helpless, they grow passive. Foster mastery by grading challenges into achievable steps and offering choices within boundaries. Love should be unconditional. Praise must be contingent on actual success. By age 2, children verbalize causal explanations. By 3, they constantly ask why. Since preschoolers lack metacognitive abilities, they absorb explanatory styles from parents, books, and characters. Leverage this by telling stories about characters who overcame challenges through persistence. As friendships become central, teach the 5-step problem-solving method. Slow down, take others' perspectives, set goals, weigh solutions, evaluate results. Teach assertiveness. Describe the situation factually, express feelings clearly, request specific change, explain how that change would help. For negotiation, help children determine realistic wants, ask assertively, listen carefully, offer compromise, and seek fair deals. Even preschoolers experience adverse responses to parental anger, elevated heart rates, stress hormones, anxiety. Avoid physical aggression, global criticism, silent treatment, asking children to take sides, or leaving conflicts unresolved. Model healthy disagreement and collaborative problem solving. Optimism isn't a cure-all. It won't substitute for good parenting, strong values, or justice. But it's powerful. Depression has become a childhood disease because we've forgotten that resilience isn't built through empty praise or protection from failure. It's built through mastery, accurate thinking, and belief that setbacks are temporary and changeable. Your child's explanatory style is forming now, shaped by every criticism, challenge, and interpretation you model. The question is whether they'll see adversity as permanent and pervasive or temporary and specific. That difference isn't just about happiness, it's about survival. The most powerful protection against depression isn't a pill or therapy. It's a mind trained to see setbacks as what they truly are: changeable, temporary, and conquerable.